This is Prop Points on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome into a Monday edition of Prop Points here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Nick Whalen here, not with Jeff Erickson today or this week. Jeff is out gallivanting around the country of Spain. We hope he enjoys his week off. We got our guy Eric Halterman from RotoWire stepping in as my co-host. Eric, very much looking forward to doing today's show with you. You'll be joining me throughout the week. So a lot of baseball talk coming your way. Eric, one of our baseball experts, really one of our everything experts over at rotowire.com. We got a great show coming your way today. We'll, of course, recap game two of the NBA Finals last night. Thunder pull even in the series as it now heads back to Indianapolis. Game three coming our way on Wednesday. We'll give you an early look at the line, some props to maybe consider jumping on early, but Finals now 1-1. We'll play a game of to bet or not to bet in the second segment. We'll take a look at some Major League Baseball and some NFL player futures. We've got our guy AJ Scholes from RotoWire stopping by later in the show to preview game three of the Stanley Cup Finals. That, of course, coming our way later tonight. We'll finish out the show with Eric's favorite plays for a nine-game slate in Major League Baseball. Eric, we got to start with the NBA. Like we said, Thunder roll their way to a win last night. And yeah, you look at the final score, 123-107. You know, Thunder led this game by double digits throughout most of the second half and really much of the first half. I thought this was about the game that most expected, right? And we saw the line jump all the way up to 11.5 at close prior to last night. You know, I think it was easy to draw the parallel to the Denver series in round two where, you know, OKC ends up blowing a lead late. They lose on the Aaron Gordon game winner, and then they come back and win by 41 in game two. This was not quite that level of domination. You know, I still think if you're OKC, obviously you're disappointed that you ended up dropping game one at home, but you look at these first two games holistically and say, we could probably play quite a bit better offensively. Defensively, they were relentless as ever. Didn't force as many steals, of course, as they did in game one, but I thought OKC had some calls go against them. You know, I thought this game was called a little bit more tightly than they were used to. They still forced 15 turnovers, but also committed 14 of their own. Neither team really had many fast break points. There wasn't a whole lot in terms of points off of turnovers. So overall, Eric, the Indiana Pacers head back to Indy. Series is 1-1. They accomplished what they need to accomplish, split these first two games, but they are still big time underdogs, not only for game three, but on the series price as well. OKC now back to -525 to win this thing outright.
Yeah, and I'm excited to discuss what I thought was going to be a pretty exciting series of finals games with you, our NBA guy here. And then I thought after that first quarter or so, we might not get a very exciting series. Thankfully, I guess the Pacers kept it close-ish for most of the rest of the game. I think, yeah, I was probably most impressed with OKC's ability to just shut down any attempted run. It seemed like whenever the Pacers even got it within 15, they were calling a timeout. They know what this Pacers team has been capable of this postseason, and they were having none of it. I'm curious, though, Nick, which team do you think is happier right now? Obviously, any team that can split on the road has to be pretty happy, but the direction the momentum is going right now seems to be all OKC. Indiana really has only been the better team for what, one quarter of the eight so far?
I think you could argue that they've been the better team for like 3 minutes of this series so far, to be honest. And look, to answer your question, I think Indy has to be happy, right? You're disappointed, obviously, with how it went last night, but you accomplished the overall goal. I don't think it was ever realistic to say we're going to take two games in OKC, right? And to me, it didn't feel all that realistic that they could even get one as essentially double-digit dogs in both of those games. So the Pacers have to be fine. Maybe you're not elated, but you're fine with where you're sitting right now as this series heads back to Indy. And, you know, like you said, even when this game looked like it was going to get completely out of control, you know, OKC went on that 19-2 run in the second quarter. And, you know, obviously that built them a double-digit lead that they never really surrendered. But it was immediately followed by a 10-0 run by the Indiana Pacers, right? Like, this is still a team that you just feel like you can never quite fully put away. And I was kind of surprised that Rick Carlisle pulled the plug last night with about 5 minutes left on the clock. Yeah, they were down, you know, 15-17. But if there's any team that could come back in the final 5 minutes of a game, it's the Indiana Pacers. And I think it said a lot to me that even when Indiana put their reserves on the court, we saw Johnny Furphy, of all people. He should not be playing in an NBA Finals game. That's how you know it's out of hand one way or the other. Mark Daigneault kept his starters in for a couple more minutes, right? That to me is him saying, look, we are taking no chances with this Pacers team, even if they have their scrubs in the game. A couple other things I wanted to hit on, Eric. You know, OKC hit 14 threes last night. You know, we talked last week about the three-point shot needing to be something that is an advantage for the Pacers in this series. It's a big part of the reason they were able to steal game one. The raw numbers look okay for OKC, but Aaron Wiggins, who was fantastic off the bench, and Alex Caruso, who also had a great game, they accounted for 9 of those 14 makes for OKC. Starters went just 4 of 17 for the Thunder from beyond the arc. So I think there's still some meat on the bone as far as being able to improve offensively as the series goes along. Chet Holmgren certainly looked a lot better last night than he did in game one, but Jalen Williams, to me, I think there's still a level up for him in this series. Missed a ton of open shots in these first two games. You know, Thunder are shooting under 40% as a team on wide open threes for this series. So we'll be very curious to see how that potentially turns as this series continues. And on the Pacers side of things, against a really difficult defense that does everything it can to literally rip the ball away from you anytime you have it, I think they're generating decent shots. I mean, 27 assists on 37 made field goals last night. They're still generating plenty of open threes. You hope those will fall at a higher rate as this series now shifts back to home court. We'll take a look at some early game three lines, some game three props in a moment. But first, you still using your buddy's gut instinct as your betting strategy? Come on, you deserve better. RotoWire.com has the real tools the pros use, rankings, projections, updates, and data that doesn't sleep. Whether you're making picks, setting your fantasy lineup, or placing bets, our award-winning insights give you the edge you need. Get started today by heading over to rotowire.com and entering the code ROTO15, R-O-T-O-1-5. Put that code in at checkout. It'll get you 15% off any of our subscription products over at rotowire.com. All right, Eric, game three. We got a couple of days to rest here, to decompress. It's not until Wednesday night, but want to take an initial look at some of the betting lines here. Thunder opened as a 5-point favorite last night. That number is now up to 5.5 at DraftKings, 69% of the handle coming in on OKC per our betting splits over at VSiN.com. I got to say, Eric, I'm with the general consensus here, at least the reaction that I saw last night. This number is a little bit lower than I would have expected. I mean, going from an 11.5-point favorite at home to opening as a 5-point dog on the road, I know it's a swing here. I know you got to travel. That is a bigger difference than I would have expected.
Yeah, but it's also a decent sized lead for the away team, and a team who I'm just checking, OKC to win this 4-1 is only plus 200, which is not that high of a payout for them to just run the table the rest of the way. Are we going to have a repeat? My mind goes back all the way to 2001 as a Sixers fan. We got the AI stepping over Ty Lue upset in game one, and then we got, I believe, 4 stompings by the Lakers. Is there a chance we're going to see something like that here? I guess the big question would be, what can Indiana do to make that not happen? Nobody on Indiana scored even 20 points yesterday. But then again, this is not a team that has a Shai Gilgeous-Alexander who scores 34 points a game or whatever he has this year. Even scoring is the deal for the Pacers. Do you think it's going to have to be Halliburton or Turner or somebody else steps up and has a huge game three if Indiana wins this? Or do you think they can do it with more of a team approach?
It's a really good question. And I think the team approach is the way they have to do it, because, you know, Tyrese Halliburton is not the same type of player as SGA or even, you know, an Anthony Edwards type who the Thunder just saw in the Western Conference Finals. That's not his MO, right? And he finished with 17 points last night. I believe 12 of those were in the fourth quarter, essentially in garbage time. That's the kind of aggression that we saw over that 6-minute stretch in the fourth that you need to see, I think, earlier in the game. And obviously credit to OKC for everything they're doing to force Tyrese Halliburton into uncomfortable situations, get the ball out of his hands. But there's not really anybody else on this roster who you can look to and say, hey, we need 30 out of you, right? I know Siakam did that in the previous series. It's just not replicable against this OKC defense. So I think you certainly need more out of Tyrese Halliburton. I think you need him to take more chances, even if that means taking some shots that he's not necessarily comfortable taking over the course of the regular season or against lesser opponents. You need him to be more aggressive. But the recipe for Indiana is an overall team approach. It's what we saw in game one. It's Obi Toppin hitting 5 threes off the bench. It's Ben Mathurin coming in and giving them a spark. TJ McConnell giving him his usual 7-9 points. I think they want to keep this thing a little bit more evenly distributed. Looking at some of the player props that I'm already targeting for game three, Eric, Well, first I want to start with the total, not a player prop. You're looking at the total right now, 228, 228 and a half, depending on what book you're using. I would lean over on that number. Obviously, we came in over that last night. We went under in game one, but both games have been within that range. I think Indy's going to be better on offense at home. I think we do see a more aggressive version of Tyrese Haliburton almost by default. Can't really be less aggressive than he's been so far in this series. And, you know, game two is actually played at a pretty slow pace. We were in the mid-90s pace-wise. And I think if you're Indy, you want to ramp that pace into the hundreds at home. OKC certainly comfortable playing at that pace as well. And again, I think the Thunder are leaving points on the table right now in terms of missing some of those open shots. I would look at Tyrese Haliburton over 2.5 threes in the prop market right now. You can get that at plus money. He's quietly gone over that number in 5 of his last 8 games. I jumped on Haliburton over 7.5 assists last night. That number's now up to 8.5 at DraftKings. This guy's basically averaging double-digit assists for the postseason. He's still got to 6 assists in each of these first 2 finals games, despite it not really feeling like he's been involved. He had 15 potential assists in game 2 last night. The numbers say he should have finished with 9 adjusted assists. So we'll trust the data there. We'll play the over on the 7.5 assists. And then one that I really like is Aaron Nesmith. You know, you can find the number at 1.5 or 2.5. I'm comfortable taking this at 2.5 at plus money, plus 140 right now. 7 made threes so far for Aaron Nesmith in this series on 15 attempts. I think that continues as this series shifts to Indianapolis. We got to take our first break. When we come back, we'll take a look at some NFL and some Major League Baseball player futures, a game of to bet or not to bet. Coming up next here on Prop Points.
Prop Points on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Welcome back into Prop Points here on VSiN. Nick Whalen, Eric Halterman hanging out with you on this Monday afternoon. We're going to take a look at some Major League Baseball futures, some NFL futures, and to help us do that, we're going to play one of our favorite games here on Prop Points, to bet or not to bet. Eric, pretty straightforward here. So I'm going to start with some Major League Baseball futures for you. You are going to tell me, would you bet this or would you not bet it? And then we will switch roles and we'll talk some NFL later in the segment. We'll start on the baseball side of things. To bet or not to bet? Paul Skeens to win the National League Cy Young Award, minus 165 right now.
Yeah, I think Paul Skeens is correctly the favorite. He's having an excellent year. He just had a very Paul Skeensian start yesterday against the Phillies. 7 2/3, gave up 1 run on 2 hits and a walk while striking out 7 and not recording a win. His last 7 starts, a 1.12 ERA and just 1 win, because that's what happens when you pitch for the Pirates. Skeens, he leads the NL in whip. He's second in the NL in ERA. Interestingly, he's only 5th in strikeouts, 10th in strikeout rate. He's at 26.7% there. He struck out 1/3 of the batters he faced last season. So in some ways, he's a little less dominant. The ERA estimators do reflect that. He's 2nd in FIP. All right, that's still excellent. But some of the more advanced ones, XFIP, Sierra, have him more like the 6th best pitcher, which suggests that if he keeps having the same very good but not elite strikeout numbers, maybe the ERA will rise a bit. The other thing here is, again, the wins. He's just 4 wins and 6 losses. Now, if this were 20 years ago, I would say that gives him no chance at winning the Cy Young. I don't think modern voters care as much about that, but man, if he's sitting under 500 at the end of the season or has single-digit wins, that's going to be tough for him. But really, for me, this is a no bet just because he hasn't been all that much more dominant than several other pitchers who are near the top. Yoshinobu Yamamoto, Logan Webb, Zach Wheeler's still in it, and more. I don't think that I would take Paul Skeens over the field necessarily, and at minus 165, you have to be pretty clearly on Skeens over the field.
All right, next MLB future, Eric. To bet or not to bet? Cal Raleigh to win the American League MVP award, 25-1.
Yeah, this is a fun one. It's really hard to look anywhere but Aaron Judge when he's hitting 396 and is on pace for 58 homers. This kind of feels like just a bet on Aaron Judge getting hurt, but we got to talk about Cal Raleigh. He's got a 1035 OPS. He's on pace for 66 homers as a catcher. Only three catchers have won an MVP in the last 48 years. Buster Posey, Joe Mauer, and Pudge Rodriguez. Could Raleigh be the fourth? There is a chance. One path would be Aaron Judge gets hurt, which unfortunately he often does. If he does, Raleigh probably would be the favorite right now. The other path would probably be Raleigh keeping this pace up, which I wouldn't expect, but, you know, I wouldn't have expected what he's done so far either. If he does somehow get all the way to 60 homers as a catcher and a little MVP fatigue sets in with voters for Judge because he's won two of the last three, maybe. So I don't think I would recommend this if you're a super sharp bettor who cares about expected value over everything else, but if sports betting for you is about throwing a couple bucks at some fun long shot, and hey, if it works out, I'll take my wife out to dinner. Mm-hmm. Sure, Cal Raleigh, I like that more than a lot of the award long shots right now.
Good note by you, by the way, and the other catchers to win MVP. Pudge Rodriguez, man, that is a name that brings me back. Put up some numbers with him in backyard baseball back in the day, Erica. I'll tell you that. Aaron Judge, by the way, minus 6,000 to win the AL MVP right now. We're getting to the point where there's an Aaron Judge versus the field betting market being offered right now at the DraftKings Sportsbook. All right, one more baseball future for you, Eric. To bet or not to bet the New York Mets to win the National League pennant, plus 550 right now. Mets currently holding the best record in the NL, 1.5 up on the Chicago Cubs, 4.5 up on the Phillies in their own division.
Yeah, and I wouldn't have liked this before the season because I don't love betting on a team to win the pennant when they're facing a really tough battle for the division. That three-game wildcard series is just so close to a toss-up that even if you're one of the better teams, you could very easily lose it. But I don't think the Mets are in that position anymore, thanks to some terrible recent runs from both the Phillies and the Braves. 2 weeks ago, the Mets were a game and a half back of the Phillies. The Braves were still hanging around 7 games behind them, but now the Mets are 4.5 up on the Phillies, 14 up on the Braves, who I think might quit by the deadline. The Mets also, speaking of the deadline, have a decent enough farm system to add pieces there. They also have good depth to withstand some injuries, and we know all about Steve Cohen's willingness to spend. I think they're going to be a better team in August than they are now. And now that they look like the clear best team in the NL East, I think plus 550 or so is pretty good value for the NL pennant.
Folks, do you want to bet smarter this football season? Become a VSiN Pro subscriber today and get a full year for just $199. Plus, you get a free pre-order of the NFL Sharp Betting Playbook by Josh Applebaum. It's a no-nonsense guide to reading the market, spotting sharp action, and making smarter NFL bets. Sign up right now. You'll get instant access to a daily email with all the best bets from VSiN hosts and their guests, real-time betting splits from DraftKings and Circa, 24/7 video access on the VSiN Watch app, plus our 2025-26 NFL betting guide, which drops on July 1st. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Go to vsin.com/subscribe and use the promo code BOOK, B-O-O-K, to sign up. That's vsin.com/subscribe. Make sure you use that promo code BOOK. All right, Eric, we got some MLB futures in our back pocket. Let's transition over to the NFL. What do you got for me?
Yeah, as an Eagles fan, I'm curious if you got anything on Saquon Barkley. I didn't see any props on how many people he'll hurdle over backwards, but how about him to lead the NFL in rushing yards again at plus 250? You like that one?
Well, first of all, I mean, Saquon, of course, is on the Madden cover. By default, this is the first Jaguar to ever appear on the Madden cover. Now it's like a nameless Jaguars player who's just being hurdled over. But as a Jaguars fan, we'll take it. We'll take anything we can get. All right, Saquon to lead the NFL in rushing. Plus 250. So we have only had two repeat rushing leaders in the NFL in the last 25 years. Derrick Henry in 2019 and 2020, LaDainian Tomlinson in 2006 and 2007. Barkley, absolutely in that class of player, right? He has the talent, he has the team around him to do it, but plus 250, not quite enough value for me. You know, for one, there's a long history of players, you know, have these all-time elite seasons like Barkley did, 2,000 yards in 16 games, all these crazy long runs, these memorable plays. It's really hard to replicate that year over year. And for whatever reason, injuries tend to pop up, you know, after an elite season like that. Barkley already has an injury history. You know, you wonder about the sustainability of some of those big plays last season that really pushed him to that gaudy yardage total. Really only ended up outpacing Derrick Henry by about 100 yards, by the way. So there was another back who was close to breaking 2,000 yards. I'm not saying Saquon Barkley is a total fade for me this year. I'm just wary of how difficult it is historically to put up two consecutive massive and maybe more importantly, healthy seasons as a modern running back. You know, you could get Derrick Henry right now at plus 350. Even though he's older, I do trust him a little bit more from a health perspective. He's just such a freak in that regard. But even beyond those two, I'd be looking to get a little more value if I'm betting this market. You know, Bijan Robinson to me is really interesting at 12-1, finished third in rushing yards a season ago, actually had the highest success rate of any running back in the NFL last season. Now, he does not generate big plays quite as much as Saquon Barkley or even Derrick Henry. Didn't even have a 40-yard run last season. But you'd hope the attempts are up a bit, and they certainly were toward the end of last season once Michael Penix took over. First 11 games of the year for Bijan Robinson, he had one game with more than 20 attempts, averaged about 71 yards per game. The final six games of the regular season, he had five games with at least 22 attempts, averaged about 112 rushing yards per game. So I think there was a marked shift, kind of a realization by the Falcons that the offense needs to run through Bijan Robinson. So he's the guy I would bet. You could sell me on Jahmyr Gibbs at 14-1. Bucky Irving at 20-1 is an interesting longer shot as well. Saquon at plus 250, it's a no bet for me.
All right, I want to ask you about my local team as well, the Bears, who have never had a 4,000-yard passer. Caleb Williams looks like he's plus 275 to become the first Bear to do that. Do you think he's got a shot?
I think he does. And I think plus 275 is a fair price here. You know, with Ben Johnson in place, I am at least intrigued by the Bears offense for the first time in a long time. Keep in mind, Jared Goff, his old quarterback in Detroit, easily cleared this number in each of the last three seasons working with Ben Johnson. You know, Caleb Williams still threw for over 3,500 yards last season in what was a disastrous offense for much of the year. It was the fifth most passing yards in Bears history, which is equal parts incredible and sad. So we're really not asking for that much of a leap from year one to year two. I think Ben Johnson brings a level of competence, a level of stability that clearly was not there last season. Part of this, though, comes down to just the individual development of Caleb Williams. Completed only 62% of his passes last season, just 6.3 yards per attempt. You compare that to Goff, who was completing 70%+, you know, 8.5 yards per attempt. It's going to have to get better. I don't think Williams is going to improve that much efficiency-wise, but he has the weapons around him to do it. DJ Moore, Roma Dunze, you add Colston Loveland, you add Luther Burden to the mix. Health maybe going to be a factor here. That's a concern with any player future, but he survived 68 sacks last season, Eric. Still played all 17 games. I think Caleb Williams could do the unthinkable and become the first Bears quarterback to throw for 4,000 yards. Give me that at plus 275. We're going to talk some Stanley Cup Finals Game 3 when we come back. AJ Scholes from RotoWire joining the show next. Keep it here. You're watching Prop Points.
Prop Points on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Back here on Prop Points, Nick Whalen, Eric Halterman hanging out with you, bringing you up to 3 p.m. Eastern. We've got game three of the Stanley Cup Finals coming our way tonight, and one of our favorite guests, AJ Scholes, our assistant NHL editor over at rotowire.com, stopping by to help us preview tonight's action. He joins us on the Progressive Guest Line. You can follow AJ on Twitter at AJScholes24. AJ, this has been a hell of a series so far. We're two games in. We had an overtime game in game one. We had a two overtime game in game two. I'm excited to see what these two teams have for us on the docket tonight. But I want to ask you, I mean, both these games have been crazy, but which finish to you has been wilder? The Draisaitl OT game winner in game one or Marchand ending it in game two?
Well, I think it's Marchand ending it in game two for me. And part of that is because he needed a shorthanded goal earlier to even extend that series. So the performance that he put together in that game too. And then for me, you know, every overtime just amps it up a level, one more after the other, that anxiety level of when that goal is going to happen, when it's going to come, who's going to win, who's not. I just love it when it gets more. I love the fact that we have more overtime periods than we've had games at this point. At this juncture, don't sleep on the game tonight to go to OT. Comes in at plus 280. That's decent value for something that so far is hitting at 100% here. So I actually don't hate that prop to see one more overtime game tonight and get nearly 3-1 value.
Well, I guess if the trend continues, it'll be a triple overtime, right? We've had one, then we've had two. We'll have three tonight. We'll get all the way up to 7 overtimes by the end of the series. These two teams ridiculously evenly matched. They went 7 last year, and again, they can't even finish a game in regulation this year. Do you think it's just going to go 7 again? Do you like the value on that one?
I was on earlier. I think Jeff asked about this, where I was going to land, and I told him 6 games. I'm sticking with that for now. In fact, it looks almost better, Panthers in 6, because they can win these two at home, hopefully, for Panthers fans out there. Drop game 5 on the road, then come back at home and potentially win 4-2. That was my pre-series pick, the Panthers in 6 games, winning 4-2. I'll stick with it at this point.
All right, AJ, speaking of sticking with it, you told us prior to game 1 that you like the Panthers to win this series. Has anything changed through 2 games? Obviously, it's 1-1 now. Panthers find a way to win that game 2 in overtime. Does it feel to you like the momentum now is back on their side? Panthers minus 120 right now to win the series at DraftKings.
100%. Not only did they win game 2 to kind of flip things around, you have the extra heartbreak of it being in overtime. And look, they almost won game 1. The problem was they got a late penalty in overtime, and frankly, a dumb penalty for flipping the puck over the boards. So they could have easily won that game and be up 2-0 here. So I agree these teams are super tight, super matched up, but for me, nothing has changed. They're headed back home now, so they stole 1 on the road. That's about all you can ask for the most part. So I think everything is pointing to the Cats, at least for me.
I'm curious, AJ, with these first 2 games going a total of 3 overtimes at the very end of a long season, are there any fatigue concerns heading into game 3? How would you expect that to affect tonight's game?
I think your fatigue concerns are going to be on the netminders. They're the ones that play every single minute. They've played practically a whole nother game at this point when you consider the overtime sessions. So I like the over. The total is 6.5. That's on the high end. For what we see in the NHL, but it comes in at plus 105. So you're getting even slightly better than even money on it. I like the over in this one. There's just so much talent. You've got Bennett, Tkachuk, Marchand on one side, Barkov. Then you've got obviously McDavid and Draisaitl. Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, if he plays tonight, is another one. There's so much star power in this game that the netminders are just doing everything they can to keep it close.
We'll have more plays from AJ Scholes momentarily, but first, hey, VSiN fans, how would you like to play the Circa Survivor or Circa Million contest for free this season? Winner Circle Proxy is giving away 1 free $1,000 entry to each contest, plus you'll get full proxy service throughout the season. And get this, you'll even be paired with a VSiN host for strategy all season long. Enter now for your chance to win. Just visit winnerscircleproxy.com/VSiN. That's winnerscircleproxy.com/VSIN. AJ Scholes, one of our great hockey editors over at rotowire.com, joining us on the Progressive Guest Line, taking a look at game 3 of the Stanley Cup Final. Looking at the line for tonight, AJ, unsurprisingly, the Panthers are favored at home, minus 142 on the money line. If you like Edmonton, you can get that at plus 120. You already told us you like the over 6.5. That number has remained static through these first 3 games. What do you like in terms of the prop market tonight?
For props, I'm looking, perhaps unsurprisingly, given my series winner, I'm looking at a pair of Panthers for the props. Matthew Tkachuk has 12 assists across 19 postseason contests. He was held off the score sheet in game 2, so I expect him to be bringing it tonight. So getting Tkachuk over half assist, you know, just to grab an assist, comes in at minus 115. It's a decent price to give up a little bit of juice. I like pairing that up with Sam Bennett as your anytime goal scorer in this one, plus 190. He actually leads the postseason goals. I think a lot of people would assume it was Draisaitl or McDavid, but no, it's Sam Bennett of the Florida Panthers with 13 goals who leads the way in the postseason here. I like him to continue that trend tonight, and don't be surprised if Bennett scores his goal and Tkachuk's one of the assists on it, and you get both props. Might as well look at a single game parlay on those as well and pair them together.
Now, AJ, as a baseball guy, I'm pretty familiar with weather and park effects mattering in betting. Is that a thing in hockey as well? I would imagine if it is, in a series like this, where we have some of the games being played in Edmonton and some of them in Florida, where last I checked, it's a little bit warmer and more humid. Does that affect your thoughts on any of the lines tonight?
It really doesn't. Now, there is a factor here in that the ice in Florida is likely to be a little bit softer because of the outside temp. They do a great job, obviously, cooling the ice, but it's hard to avoid the arena warming up, which means things are going to move a little bit slower. Honestly, I would say that probably favors the Panthers. The Edmonton Oilers are built for speed. This is a fast team, and so if the ice is even fractionally slowing them down, I do think it benefits the Panthers. But overall, in general, it's that classic, we're both playing on the same ice. It's not really going to give anybody a huge edge, and I agree with that. But if there's a team that it will slightly benefit, it's going to be the home side because they're not as reliant on speed.
AJ, I want to back up to, you know, some of your plays for either could be for tonight, could be for this series, but you had kind of an exotic that you told us about prior to the segment here. Total hat tricks over 0.5. So somebody to record a hat trick at some point in this series, getting that at plus 250. Is there a particular player you have in mind for that one?
There's so many options. That's why I think it's such a good value at plus 250. I mean, obviously, McDavid could go off at any point. Draisaitl is capable of it. Bennett has been close. He's had some two-goal games here. So they're just the multitude of options that are available to you. And look, it could be somebody that's not even on my radar. A Carter Verhaeghe could come out of nowhere and get a hat trick in one of these games. It's too good a value across, you know, however many four or five games we have left that somebody's got to do it with these star-studded, offensively gifted lineups.
All right, to wrap things up here, I'm curious your thoughts about the Conn Smythe Trophy winner. Last year, Connor McDavid won it, even though the Oilers lost the series. But if you're saying Florida might win this in six, I'd imagine you're looking elsewhere. Who are your best bets for the Conn Smythe winner right now?
Absolutely. I doubt we're going to see a back-to-back year in which, you know, the best player on the losing team gets it. It's the only time that has happened in the post lockout era. So to happen 2 years in a row, I think is really unlikely. For me, again, I've been harping on him all day, but Sam Bennett at plus 600 is really good value when you consider the fact that he's leading the way in goals. I know Sergei Bobrovsky comes in as a bigger favorite at plus 300, but his last two games, again, he's doing enough to help them out and to get the wins, but he's not stealing games right now. And so for me, I think you have to look at the offensive component. And if you're on the Cats like I am, Sam Bennett makes the most sense. Maybe our Alexander Barkov at your long shot at plus 1600. But those are the guys that I would lean towards.
Okay, there we go. Sam Bennett, 6-1. Barkov, 16-1. Like you said, AJ, great stuff as always, man. I always appreciate you giving us some of your time, and enjoy game three tonight.
Yeah, absolutely. Should be a fun one. Let's hope for some more overtime, some more bonus hockey.
There we go, baby. AJ Scholes, check out his great work for us over at rotowire.com. Check him out on Twitter at AJScholes24. Best bets for tonight's baseball slate coming your way next here on Prop Points. We'll be right back.
You're watching Prop Points on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Prop Points rolls along here on the Sports Betting Network. Nick Whalen, Eric Halterman hanging out with you. Eric stepping in for our guy Jeff Erickson this week. We're taking you up to the top of the hour, but as always, make it rain with Adam Schein coming up next here on VSiN. That starts up at 3 p.m. Eastern. He's going to have Jonathan Davis on the show, giving his best bets for Game 3 of the Stanley Cup Finals. After Make It Rain, follow the money with Mitch Moss and Pauly Howard. That's coming up at 4 p.m. Make sure you stick around for VSiN Primetime tonight. Tim Murray and Matt Eumanns on the show. That starts up at 7. All right, Eric, we have an abbreviated Monday night baseball slate. No day games today. A lot of teams traveling ahead of a busy week, but still a healthy slate. And I know you have some best bets that you're ready to unload. We'll start with a big series in the National League West, the Dodgers at the San Diego Padres. This is Dustin May going up against Nick Pivetta. What do you like here?
Yeah, well, I like the game in general, and I like the series. Really excited to see these two teams going at it. Two good teams I expect to be fighting throughout the rest of the season for that NL West title. I'm not confident on either side of the money line here, but the bet that I like most is Max Muncy to hit a homer at about plus 400. You can get that. And Muncy is making more contact than he has in years this season because he got new glasses. Really a wild story. He had an astigmatism that he got corrected. I guess it had been worsening over the course of his career. I don't really know how he's had the success he's had while not really being able to see, but he can see now, and he's having a pretty impressive mid-30s bounce back here. Nick Pivetta, on the other hand, the pitcher for the Padres, he's having a great season, and it's because his home run problem has evaporated, so you might think that taking a home run prop for the Dodgers is crazy, but his home run problem seems to have evaporated mostly due to luck. There's two things that go into a home run problem. It's how many fly balls do you give up and how many of those fly balls are homers. The second one, the pitcher doesn't have that much control over, and that's the one where Pivetta looks a lot better this year. His ground ball rate has actually gotten even lower, so I'm not sure I trust him as a home run suppressor yet. So I will trust Max Muncy with his new vision to be able to knock one out of the park.
All right, big series for a couple other National League teams starting up in Milwaukee tonight. The Atlanta Braves making a visit to what I will always call Miller Park. Braves minus 156 on the money line. Brewers with Aaron Civale on the mound, plus 128. Big part of the reason, Eric, why the Braves are such heavy favorites tonight is they will send Chris Sale out there. Looking to snap a seven-game losing streak. Braves struggling to stay afloat right now in the NL wildcard race. They are now 9.5 back. Brewers, meanwhile, 2.5 out of that final spot. As a long-suffering Brewers supporter, Eric, I have a feeling I'm not going to like where you're going with your play for this game.
Yeah, and you know, I don't think I'm confident enough in the Braves overall, given the way they've been performing lately, to take them on the money line. But I do like one on Chris Sale. If you take him to go over 18.5 outs, you can get a pretty good payout there. It looks like, I think it's plus 160 at the moment. It seems crazy to get this kind of plus money on a reigning NL Cy Young to get a single out in the seventh inning against a pretty bad offense. The Brewers are 25th in OPS, but Sale has only hit this over in 4 of 13 starts this year, so you can understand the price. But then again, he hit it in none of his first 6 starts and then 4 of his last 7. The additional reason I think he's quite likely to get at least an out or two in the 7th inning is that Braves manager Brian Snitker is really going to want length from Sale today, given how terrible the Atlanta bullpen has been lately. They have the worst bullpen ERA over the last week, 6.63, 6th worst bullpen ERA, 4.91. Over the last 2 weeks, their closer, Raisel Iglesias, no longer trustworthy, and nobody else has really stepped up. I think they want Sale to go 7, if at all possible, tonight.
All right, yet another big game in the National League, Eric. The Cubs and the Phillies. Huge series coming up here, really, for both teams. Cubs continue to roll. Phillies lost 5 in a row. They're 1-9 in their last 10. They've now dropped down to that third wildcard spot in the National League. But help arrives tonight in the form of Zach Wheeler. He makes his return from paternity leave, going up against Matthew Boyd.
Yeah, so I guess we've got competing narratives about Zach Wheeler in this one. You could say dad strength. He's going to have his best game he's ever had. We do see that sometimes. But you could also say he's coming off his worst start of the year. He gave up 6 runs, his most recent start. And he's likely to be out of rhythm, I would think, due to this extended rest. Pitchers really like getting into a groove, pitching every 5 or 6 days. Often, when you see a guy get extra rest, he actually does worse than expected. And on top of that, the Cubs have simply been the better team than the Phillies this year. I would have expected the Phillies to be a bit better at the start of the year, but the Cubs, particularly in run differential, theirs is 90 runs better than the Phillies this year. And with the Phillies struggling lately, without Bryce Harper right now, he's on the IL, and with Matthew Boyd on the mound for the Cubs, who I do trust. He's got a 3.01 ERA, 1.19 whip. The ERA estimators around the mid-3s say he's not really getting that lucky. I think the Cubs are a better team than the Phillies right now. And with plus money on their money line, I like that a lot.
Let's stick in the National League and take a look at Marlins Pirates. Not exactly a game, Eric, that I think most national fans will be circling tonight, but a big one for fantasy purposes. Certainly we see the return of Eury Pérez for the Miami Marlins. He goes up against Mike Burrows. Pérez, of course, coming back from Tommy John. First appearance this will be for him since late in the 2023 season. You know, cruised through a series of rehab assignments, looked really good against minor league competition. Is this a decent landing spot for him, you know, against one of the worst offenses in baseball right now?
Yeah, Eury Pérez is definitely why I wanted to talk about this one. He is, I believe, the youngest pitcher in baseball still, even though we saw him 2 years ago. He came back from Tommy John, and he's still the youngest. That's how young and talented he is. And yes, this is a great landing spot. I would maybe consider the over with Mike Burrows, unproven rookie, on the mound for the Pirates, and with Eury Pérez probably not likely to go deep in the game. But with these two lineups, I don't think I'm comfortable taking it over. So I am going to take Pérez to go under 14.5 outs. Or you could also look at some of the unders, like his under 4.5 strikeouts. Basically, I just don't think the Marlins are going to push Pérez very long in this one. He's maxed out at 5 innings. That's 15 outs on his rehab assignment. He recorded just 13, 4 1/3 innings in his last start. And he struggled with control, a 10.5% walk rate on rehab. So while the ERA was good, not everything's great. And that is pretty common coming back from Tommy John surgery, that the control is a little bit off. We'd consider the over on the walks here as well. Excited to have Pérez back, but I don't think we're going to see fully unleashed Pérez for at least several more starts, and probably not full unleashed Pérez until next year.
All right, let's hit one more game, Eric, before we hand out our GBank best bets of the night to close out the show. The Seattle Mariners out in Arizona taking on the Diamondbacks tonight. Emerson Hancock going up against Merrill Kelly. I know you have a play on the total here.
Yeah, I like the over in this one. We've got two good lineups and 1.5 shaky pitchers, 1.25 shaky pitchers. We'll get to that in a minute. Arizona is fifth in the league by WRC+, Seattle seventh. So two lineups who have really been on their game this year. Emerson Hancock for the Mariners, do not trust him much at all. A 5.19 ERA with a 1.47 whip, gives up way too much contact. Then Merrill Kelly on the other side, his season-long numbers, a 3.43 ERA, an 0.99 whip, that's quite good. But we've seen Merrill Kelly for several years. He's fine, but he's nothing special. Gives up a fair amount of contact, and in two of his last three starts, he's allowed at least 4 runs. I think the Mariners can get to him, but they might not even need to hit the over here, because the Diamondbacks could do it against Emerson Hancock.
All right, there we have it. Some excellent baseball plays from our guy, Eric Halterman. It's now time for our GBank best bets of the night. They're brought to you by GBank, introducing the $500 trifecta from GBank, First Bet, and VSiN. All you have to do is open a GBank Visa Signature credit card in the first 90 days, deposit and play through $1,000 over at First Bet to trigger the $500 trifecta. If you do that, you'll receive $200 in cashback rewards on your GBank Visa Signature credit card. First Bet will give you a $100 deposit match, and VSiN completes the trifecta with a free VSiN Pro subscription through October 31st. That's a $200 value, folks. It's the $500 trifecta from GBank, First Bet, and VSiN. Head over to VSiN.com/GBank. That's VSiN.com/GBank. This one-time promotion is limited to customers opening a new account in response to this offer and will not apply to requests to convert existing accounts. Apply today. Terms and conditions apply. Again, that's VSiN.com/GBank. Eric, your inaugural GBank best bet. Where are we going?
Yeah, I'm deciding between one of the two I just mentioned. Am I going to bet against my Phillies or your Brewers? And you know what? I'm going to bet against your Brewers. Chris Sale, over 18.5 outs for all the reasons I mentioned. Brewers offense, not at all scary. And the Braves need some length from Chris Sale tonight. I think they're going to get it.
You were doing so well, Eric. You were doing so well. Tough way for you to close out the show, betting against the Brewers. I'm going to Aaron Nesmith. We talked about it earlier. Over 2.5 threes. Give me that at plus 140. 12 of his 15 attempts so far in this series have been either open or wide open, according to NBA.com. He's got 7 makes through these first 2 games. That's going to wrap the Monday edition of Prop Points. Keep it right here on VSiN. Make it rain with Adam Schein coming your way next.